kai aku nui ki a kura he rarau mai ki te hui. Ko mihi ngārangi tēnei, e mihi atu nei ki a koutou katoa. Welcome to the hui, Māori current affairs for all New Zealanders. E taro ake nei. She fled domestic violence in Australia with her New Zealand-born tamariki.
This isn't me trying to be nasty and keep my children away. I'm actually trying to protect us from a horrible monster.
Now, her ex-partner has accused her of abduction and wants the children returned.
We currently have protection orders against this man, so how they could forcibly remove my children and take them back to someone that they're terrified of.
We look at one woman's battle against the Hague Convention.
I really, really need for my children and I to be safe, and there's absolutely no way we will be if we're forced back to Australia.
And we meet a father and daughter double act.
It is quite good having a dad that looks like a bouncer in comedy, because it means I never get heckled when we're on the same lineup. To be fair, I also never get laid those nights either. So.
Half and Huffies, Courtney and Heta Dawson, taking the comedy scene by storm.
Tahuti mai. The Hague Convention was designed to protect children from the harmful effects of international abduction by a parent, ensuring their return to the country they reside in for the courts to determine custody. But what if one parent is the victim of domestic abuse with no financial or family support in the country they currently live in? That's the situation faced by one wahine who's brought her New Zealand-born tamariki home after moving from refuge to refuge in Australia. The Australian courts have ordered she return the children, and now she's battling the Hague Convention to remain here. For legal reasons, we can't identify her. Anei tana kōrero.
A wahine Māori flees domestic abuse in Oz and returns to Aotearoa.
This isn't me trying to be nasty and keep my children away. I'm actually trying to protect us from a horrible monster.
Now, she and her tamariki could be forced to go back.
I never ever thought in a million years that I'd get forced out of my own home.
In a legal case being fought on both sides of the Tasman.
I don't understand how they started kicking out Kiwis for domestic violence convictions, and yet they're forcing us back to a Kiwi with domestic violence convictions.
It is the most unusual of cases, a wahine Māori and her tamariki being ordered to leave Aotearoa to live in Australia.
So, are your children Australian?
No, born and bred in New Zealand.
So you are all New Zealanders.
Mm-hmm.
How can you be called back to Australia?
That's what I'm still trying to figure out.
Because this case is before the family court, we can't identify the whānau in any way. But the mother claims she suffered years of domestic violence.
When did the violence start against you?
On and off, it's always been there. When I was 10 weeks pregnant with our first son, He's a very heavy drinker, and he drank about 2.5 bottles of wine and wanted to drive to the shop, and I wouldn't give him the car keys, so he broke my arm trying to get his car keys back.
Hoping for a fresh start, the woman and her Kiwi partner moved to Australia with their tamariki in 2017. But it was anything but.
It was just every time he drank, he'd get these weird things in his head, and then he'd just get really violent.
People always say, why don't you leave, eh?
Yeah, it's so hard. I just wanted my children to have their dad, and I wanted to believe the things that he said when things were good. I just wanted to be able to tell my children that if it didn't work out, I had done everything I could to try and hold our family together first.
While every custody battle has an element of he said, she said, what is not in dispute is that the man was arrested and later convicted on domestic violence charges late in 2017. An Australian judge also imposed a family violence order which prevents him from contacting the woman. That order remains in place until next January.
The way that Australia handles domestic violence is horrible. It's horrible for victims. every time you go to the police and complain, they basically just make you move. So at some stages, we even had to camp in tents while I was looking for new houses. And then we'd find another house, settle straight in. He'd find us again, and the police would force us to move into another refuge.
With two warrants out for her partner's arrest, money running out, and no whānau support in Australia, the woman decided she should return to Aotearoa.
So when you did decide to come home, did you seek advice on it?
Straight away. I was actually talking to my social workers that we had in refuge, and they told me that I had no other options but to come home because the support over there was lacking for me on the visa that I was on while I was in Australia.
For your safety?
Absolutely. They said that they couldn't keep us safe the way things were, and there was nothing financially that could help us at the time either.
The woman maintains the Australian police also told her she was free to come home, but now her former partner has accused her of abduction. He wants the children returned to Australia under the Hague Convention, an international agreement which aims to make sure children who are taken overseas are sent back to the country they normally live in.
What is the situation? Are you running from the law?
They issued a warrant to remove my children, even though the Hague Convention is basically only about arguing where the parents fight in court over custody for their children. A judge had ordered that my children be forcibly removed and taken back to Australia. We currently have protection orders against this man, so how they could forcibly remove my children and take them back to someone that they're terrified of, I can't get my head around it.
The woman's case highlights what has been a rigidly enforced Hague Convention. But there are many who now believe it's outdated. Auckland University Law Professor Mark Hennigan.
What's happening now is that more and more cases are coming forward where women are fleeing from situations where they feel unsafe, where they're feeling being controlled, and where they feel there's violence. And it was never designed for those cases. In fact, in 1980, we didn't really talk about family violence like we do today. So it's kind of not fit for purpose for all the kind of cases where people do leave with their children. They leave in different circumstances now than in 1980.
Why hasn't the convention been updated?
International conventions are difficult because you've got hundreds of countries who all have different views on, you know, the role of parents, the importance of violence in societies, and there are lots of different things going on. So to sit around a table with hundreds of countries to say, we're going to do this, is very difficult.
But Professor Hennigan says the courts are starting to soften their stance, giving hope to women fleeing violence.
There's a recent case in our Court of Appeal, which just last year, which really took quite a different view and really changed the landscape in some ways, saying that if a mother, for example, is going to suffer, in that case, there was violence involved and there was risks of her going back and not having enough money to live on, and there was evidence that her mental health would suffer quite badly, they said that's enough for it to have impact on the children and create an intolerable situation. So it's one of the first cases where they've kind of opened the door for perhaps a more sensitive approach to the interpretation of the standards that are set.
In this case, the courts have ruled the woman must return to Australia, but her lawyer has appealed. A final decision on her fate will be made within the next few weeks.
I'm so heartbroken that I'm stuck in a system that doesn't care about that. It actually cares more about this monster having the rights to see his children than my life. Because as far as I'm concerned, and the courts, and on paperwork, he's done more than enough to prove that he is not a safe person to be around.
Difficult question, but what will you do if you have to go back?
You know, it's terrifying to think of going back to that life we had there. You know, it was like $1 million paradise. And it's just nothing but darkness for us because we were just so terrified all the time. I really, really need for my children and I to be safe, and there's absolutely no way we will be if we're forced back to Australia.
And we'll keep you updated on that story. Akuakenei ka kōrero ahau, kia Debbie Ngāre Wapaka, kai arahi takirua o te pāti Māori. Te Pāti Māori is calling for a joint task force to investigate anti-Māori hate speech. It comes after a video posted online by a white supremacist made threats against the party, Māori people and marae. It's since been taken offline, but Māori Party co-leaders have criticised the police response and lodged a complaint with the Independent Police Conduct Authority. I'm joined on Zoom by Pāti Māori co-leader Debbie Ngāriwa-Packer. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe.
Before we jump into that, I just want to talk to you about the Hague Convention and that first story. What are your thoughts? Wahine Māori, tamariki Māori being asked, you know, being required to return to Australia?
I think it's that almost connects to what we're dealing with today is that, you know, as Wahine Māori, we are continuously experiencing this marginalisation of our role in trying to keep our tamariki safe, our whānau together, connected to our whenua, to our hapū. And, you know, we just continuously had this whole misogynistic application and behaviour. I mean, this the Hague Convention is what, the 80s? Is it the 1980s? It's been around, it's outdated. We're clearly seeing the impact of disconnecting our tamariki from where they're safe and where they're well. It's horrific. It's actually really, really cruel. But again, you know, we've continuously seen the battle that Wahine Māori, Wahine, you know, trying to keep their whānau together, are contending with it.
Kia ora.
Now, it was heartbreaking.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks now since that video was posted online and taken down. It talked about the slaughter of Māori, it called for a civil war. It's directly targeted at you. I te tuatahi ahua kei te pihi a koe.
Oh, kei te pai aho. You know, I think, first of all, there were a few other wahine that were part of this, and I think we're all in our own way pushing back. But it is, you know, again, it resonates with this film, this story that we've just had, is that there is an absolute fallout, not only from racists, but from those racists who are threatened by us as wahine taking our role, wearing our taonga, assuming our confidence, standing up. And, you know, I think the violence that is coming down the social media halls, the threats that are coming out, particularly at wahine. You know, I think I've heard the sister, you know, Nanaia Mahuta being called by some of those, you know, those idiots, you know, Bertha Barcode. The targeting of them is just so perverse and so targeted because we are threatening everything that colonisation was built on. The first thing they do is dismantle whānau, is displace the wahine, is affect the ability to continue wakapapa, to affect our ability to carry taonga. And so I'm strong, I'm really great. You know, our tūpuna went through much worse. But, and I don't think they know where we come from. You know, I'm from Taranaki, for goodness sake, but I think that's the sad thing is that inherent is the mana of wahine is so powerful in that we've been able to band together and push back, and that's the fallout.
Te Pāti Māori is calling for a task force to investigate anti-Māori hate speech. What are you hoping to achieve?
Well, the first thing is, you know, it's pretty pathetic that we had to call for it. It's like, well, what have you got in place? When someone threatens thousands of Māori, 150 marae, is there like a, I don't know, like a little lever or a little something that triggers an action and says, oh, a whole lot of Māori have been threatened, we're going to create a task force, we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen and we've got this on our radar. So, you know, it was pretty pathetic that two little MPs in Te Pāti Māori had to do that. And what it has showed is a huge gap that exists still in this country is the sense of denial and apathetic response to the fact that we have growing white supremacists, growing white superiority, and, you know, 50% of the terrorist attacks are from white supremacists, and we have nothing in place for tangata whenua.
Well, you're absolutely right, because there is no lever, and we saw that a couple of weeks ago when there were multiple complaints sent to police and NetSafe New Zealand and the rest of it, and nothing was able to be done. In fact, it was a couple of Māori experts in the area, I believe, that managed to get hold of someone in Google.
A whole
so
lot.
What could we possibly put in place to make it a quicker response?
Oh, I think the first thing is that there needs to be absolute seriousness taken when there is hate attacks, violent attacks given to Māori, full stop. You don't get 20 hours on air, you're off in 1 minute. The second thing is that the police, and there needs to be a better coordinated response. We've still, you know, we didn't have the commissioner turn up last week and he did not tell us until after the hui was scheduled. And I think, you know, what we've seen is a lack of connect between NZSIS and the police, a coordinated approach across the country. So what we want is to bring to rise that this happens, this triggers this response, this triggers this rollout of a response across in a cohesive way, so that if someone's done something from Papamoa and someone's done something in Christchurch, we have one group coordinating it all, not five or six who don't talk to each other, which is what we experience.
Can I quickly ask you about SNA's special natural, significant natural areas, because we've had hikoi this week, we've had lots of complaints about it. You know, tangata whenua say undermines te roranga, te ratanga forests and birds say we have to have these special areas, you know, cut off so no one else can use them. How do we get a balance there?
Well, the balance is only one way, and that is the balance is by the mana of the whenua. You know, we know how to and have been kaitiaki. What's happened is we've been removed from able to look after our whenua. It's no one's place to be telling the mana of the whenua how and where and what should be looked after. That has to be done and led from us. And I think that's where this is all wrong. We're not a group of people that come together through employment. We are, as you know, mihi ngaringa, I'm singing to the choir, but this has to be led by mana whenua, and I think that's where this whole SNA has gone wrong. And it needs to not come through central or local government. Our whānau needs to say how and where and where they see it needs to happen. And in places like Taranaki, where we've been forcibly removed from that, we are still kaitiaki. So yeah, there's a lot they've got to get right on this SNA, and I support all those that are out there saying stop kati and get it right.
Kia ora, I would love to ask you more, but we're out of time. Tēnā koe, I te tukana.
Kia ora.
E whai ake nei ka tūtaki atu kia half and hawhi. Auraki mai anō. Stand-up is considered one of the most challenging forms of comedy to master. But a father-daughter duo is making it look easy. Heta and Courtney Dawson are half in hawhi, and they've been sharing their hilarious takes on whānau life with audiences around Aotearoa. D'Angelo Martin caught up with the award-winning pair, and a warning, the story contains jokes for grown-ups. Discretion is advised.
It's not often you see a double act in stand-up comedy, let alone a father and daughter duo.
It is quite good having a dad that looks like a bouncer in comedy, because it means I never get heckled when we're on the same lineup. To be fair, I also never get laid those nights either.
I don't know how I feel about that line every time you say it.
But South Aucklanders Courtney and Heta Dawson are taking Aotearoa's comedy scene by storm.
I was at a party the other weekend and someone was like, "Hey man, how are you? Is your dad coming? Is your f***ing dad coming?"
It's a complete lie because I never get invited to those parties, by the way.
Their stage name is Half in Hafe, and they're packing out clubs with their homegrown humour.
Hello, darling. So just to be clear, this is my wife. This isn't going to be a trio. If she does say anything, it's a heckle, so... And then I can finish with the bouncer stuff.
Here at the Classic Comedy Club in Tāmaki Makaurau, Heta and Courtney Dawson are preparing for their first show in the New Zealand International Comedy Fest. The pair started out as solo acts, first hitting the comedy circuit in 2019.
Talk a little bit about your guys' introduction into comedy.
A friend of mine was at work and he did it. He did an open mic night and he was telling me all about it. Everybody was laughing at me. They laughed at the right places. I was on such a high and I was just looking at him dead in the eyes and I was thinking, bro, that is so cool, bro. And in my head I was thinking, I think I'm funnier than you. I'm going to give this shit a crack. And that's how I got started. I just said, sign me up.
Well, I went and saw that show and I remember thinking, like, there's absolutely no way that I would ever do that. Like, that is so terrifying. I was really scared to watch you because I was like, if you bomb, I'm going to, like, pass away from secondhand embarrassment. But then my dad was like, I'll just give it a go. I did it and then I really enjoyed it.
When you muck up and you acknowledge the muck up, you're actually funnier than it can be really, really funny.
Yeah.
Hita and Courtney quickly found individual success at the Raw Classic Comedy Quest, he as a co-winner and her as a grand finalist.
Again, you're trying to get your words out.
Then, father and daughter decided to join forces as half and halfy.
Yeah, we talked about how we would tell jokes about the same subject matter from different perspectives, and different perspectives both as like a father and a daughter, but also like generational differences, and then, yeah, as performers as well, and so that kind of duality.
And the duality doesn't end there. The two have very different ways of coping when their jokes don't go to plan.
If something falls flat, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and just keep going. I'm a 53-year-old male. what do I care about what you think?
Dad's pretty good at stand-up, not so much with the acting. I'm definitely still learning how to do that. Because when things don't work, I'm like, ugh! And I just, like, try and tell over the other jokes over top of it, and I get flustered, and then, like, I leave, and then go and have 12 beers and hate myself for a week.
Thanks, Courtney.
The Dawsons are also using humour to tackle the tough stuff.
I'm in a legal dispute at the moment. It's been going on for quite a while. I won't tell you who I'm in it with, but you'll know straight away. It's the Treaty of Waitangi, that's what I...
Behind the laughter, a serious message.
You might know there's Te Tiriti or Waitangi. I know it's a kick in the balls. Because also I'm Māori, I also see the funny things that happen in around the world, like things that happen with treaties, things that happen with Māoridom, and the changes that are going on, and how I can express that on the stage.
And I think part of that as well is that comedy spaces are predominantly white spaces. So if you tell a joke about the treaty or you talk about being Māori, sometimes people just, like, clench up and they don't want to laugh. They need permission to laugh, because otherwise they think they're being racist, so...
And I just need a sniff of a couple of people who go, oh, that's funny, and I'm all in. It's just treaty joke after treaty joke.
Māori have been pioneers of New Zealand comedy, and the Dawsons want to see more Māori joining them on the stand-up circuit.
There's some barriers around the comedy industry in that a lot of the shows are in central Auckland and not often at spaces that are inviting to Māori, and it literally doesn't make sense because, like, Māori are the funniest people and then there's only, like, a handful of us doing comedy. I am very proud of being Māori. My papa, he's from a beautiful place up north, Ko Te Hapua, and my nana was from the Waikato. So growing up, my dad liked to tell us that we own half the North Island. But as you can see, my mum is Pākehā, so she had the last laugh on that one.
Māori are naturally funny. They're great storytellers. It's what you hear it around the kitchen table, walking down the street, at parties. They're just natural, and I don't know why they're not making... You know, how do you make that step into being able to go onto stage and tell your stories?
There's way more people starting out now. It's developing, I hope, into a space that's more inviting for Māori.
And comedy isn't the only new challenge Heta's taken on. He's also started his real journey, signing up for classes at Te Wānanga o Aotearoa.
It doesn't matter how old you are, I'm 53, but I also take inspiration from Scotty Morrison, who he learnt when he was in university, and I thought, well, if this dude can do it at that age, then why can't I do it at my age?
Rudy.
Rua. Rua. And so for me, my goals are is that before I pass away, a fluent speaker in Te Reo, and also when I feel it, I'll change my last name, because my whānau name is Tahana. And when I feel that it's right for me and where I've gone through my journey, then I'll change my name and then I'll die.
Backstage and half and half it are running lines to perfect each joke.
You know, I missed out dick pics last night. It's not your ordinary 19-year-old dick pic joke. It's
an old person's dick pic joke.
For this comedy duo, it's all about making their set better.
I was at the dairy the other day, and the guy behind the counter goes, "Hey, you want a plastic bag?" Shit, I haven't seen plastic bags for years. This dude is selling single-use plastic bags. I've only got a packet of gum. I said, "Shit, yeah, man, I'll take that."
This show has been a huge success, and while getting laughs is one thing, working together is the best reward of all.
Like, we both have definitely gotten closer through that experience. I think we're working on a creative project together, and there were definitely tense moments prior to the show, but I felt like during the show, it was all good, eh? We were just...
For me, watching Courtney, I got an appreciation of her style, of how she works, and you know, I was really proud of Courtney and being able to see her fly on the stage, which was quite different because I've got a dad hat on, but when I'm sitting back, I've got a performer's hat on, and I thought, wow, look at her go.
I'm gonna pull my pants up now.
When it comes to comedy, there's nothing half-fly about these two.
Be quiet. Play the music. Let's get out of here.
Tēnā kōrua. Nā D'Angelo Martin, te rari puata. Hei te rā wiki I te hui.
The pressures of rangatahi today are more serious than just assignments and exams.
We have a lot of students who are couch surfing. A lot of students who are just really trying to bring themselves up for a whole pile of reasons.
From the kitchen to kura, kindness with a side helping of compassion is being served up for hungry teens.
Every single one I know is going to go somewhere and help our rangatahi.
Meet the wahine fueling the charity that's filling freezers around the country.
There's always been this thing around what can I do for young Māori rangatahi.
No child in New Zealand should be going hungry. I don't understand it.
Ko hei kina te hui e hoa mā, nohoro mai rā.
Support from New Zealand on Air.